For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Well, Larry Hughes is going to pop out and get the ball. Jordan's going to rub his man off of Leitner and then cut down the center and gets a nice pass from Larry Hughes.
Welcome to another hopefully exciting episode of the Believe in Wizards podcast. If you guys like what you hear from the show, please consider, leaving us a review on iTunes. I know everybody asks for a 5-star review, but we only want that if you actually feel that way. So whatever would be an accurate representation of how you feel about the show, please leave us a review. And we're happy to take any feedback or anything you guys think we could be doing better. You know, always reach out on social media and things like that too. And we kind of love all feedback here. So rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And before we get into today's show, I'm just going to get the usual ad reads out of the way here. So as always, our trusty staple, Bet Online. We're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back to start another football season. As always, Bet Online is your number one spot for all pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, Bet Online continues to be the number one source for everything football. So head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% off welcome bonus. That's double your initial deposit just for signing up. But don't forget the promo code NFL100. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And once again this week, we have our friends from Balance 7 on board. So I don't know if you guys have heard, but apparently Lamar Odom, former NBA player, is going to be returning to professional basketball in Spain soon. Sounds like he's going to try for Pau Gasol's team, which is pretty exciting to see those two guys reunited. He's been taking a new product that he credits a lot of his recent bounce back and spryness to, and that's Balance 7. So Balance 7 is a pH-balancing alkaline supplement drink. It's like vitamins or supplements in liquid form. Just 1 ounce a day, 3 times a day, and in 1 week, you'll see obvious effects. So just for me, I'm getting a little older. I've mentioned on the show before, I play a lot of tennis. So I've been trying to play every single day for the last 2 weeks. And I'm starting to feel it. I'm only in my early 30s. So I got nowhere to go but down from here, I think. But I'm getting ready to the point where I think Balance 7 seems like something I might have to do at this point. So you can see how it's helped people like Lamar. And right now, if you go to balance7.com and use the promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, you'll get $10 off their 32-ounce bottle. And that bottle lasts 11 days, which is the perfect amount of time to feel the pH balancing drink go to work. Again, that's balance7.com and use the code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, at checkout. I did, and if it worked for Lamar, and hopefully it'll work for me, it can work for you guys too. And with that, I think we've got a really exciting show for you guys today. So stay tuned and, let's hit it. All right. Welcome in, Wizards fans. Today, I am joined by Chase Carroll, host of the Wizards Walkthrough, an OG for the Wizards Extra Days, one of my favorite people to talk Wizards with. So Chase, thanks for joining me.
No, of course. I appreciate any opportunity to get to talk some Wizards with you. We've had some good conversations. I'm sure this is going to be just like those times. I'm got no doubt.
I feel like you and I are usually on the same page about most things. So I'm curious to see how this sort of plays out for us today, if there's any we kind of, wildly disagree on. But folks, I think for the premise of today's episode would just be running through the roster and doing this on not a team basis, but an individual player by player. What would mean success? What are the success criteria for each player on this roster? So whether that's a key statistic or a key area of the game, what would we look back on at the end of this year and say, hey, that guy had a good year or overachieved or the opposite of that means they kind of underachieved. So Chase, I pulled this list off of Basketball Reference, which is seemingly in no particular order whatsoever, but I think that's actually kind of good, you know, rather than going like top to bottom, we'll kind of mix it up a little bit. So the first one I have on here is Haul Neto. So last year he played 64 games, averaged about 9 points, 2.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and shot 39% from three in about 20 minutes per game. I will let you kick us off here. What would be a successful season for Haul Neto based on this Wizards roster?
So we can go anywhere really with this, you said. So
yep.
I don't know if I'll necessarily go with stats for Haul Neto, because, you know, as a role player, I don't think we need to necessarily look too deeply into his statistics to determine what's a good year. So for him, I think he just needs to be the top guard off the bench. You know, we brought in Holiday, who's also going to be a good option playing point guard. But I think Haul Neto, he's good at the point. He's good at the two. He's shown that he can be a dependable option if you need to go there. He did end up playing, I guess you could say he played a little bit of a three in the playoffs. Yeah, I don't want to see any three from Haul Neto this year. I think that was just a Scott Brooks lineup flaw that he enjoyed playing three guards. I don't know if that's going to be happening now with Wes Unseld Jr. in the building, but for me, a successful year for Haul Neto is just providing, the best bench guard minutes that we have, because I think he's going to be the guy that we really depend on most. He's a guy who, you know, off ball, he's a decent defender. He can get in the passing lanes, but we need to see more consistent defense, I think, out of Haul Neto. Because when you look top to bottom on this roster, the defense did probably improve a little bit, but I don't know where, I don't think we still have that stopper on the roster. So we're just going to need some good team defense from our guys, and especially our bench guards like Haul Neto.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that when they brought him in, they talked about how, like, you know, on paper, all the defensive analytics were really promising him for him. And I think, like you said, he was good in spurts, and then occasionally he'd just get cooked, which I think at the NBA level just happens to everybody, yeah, unless you're like Kawhi or something. But for Neto, it's just, I'm totally with you. I think him being sort of that Swiss Army knife kind of guard for them, can he play a little point? Can he play a little two? Definitely no three. But can he, you know, put up remote, like reasonable resistance on somebody's best perimeter player? Those kinds of things. If he's just solid all the way across the board for them and can play, I think 20 minutes was a reasonable amount of minutes for him. I think that'd be good. The only situation where I think we might need more from him is if Dinwiddie ends up being kind of limited or can't play on the back, you know, second night of back-to-backs or has minutes restriction or whatever. That really means Neto has to have like a really starter level part of the year for us. So that's kind of where I see him. Like, he's just good enough to be a backup, but if you have to rely on him to start games, like, you're kind of in trouble.
Yeah, definitely. He provided some good starting minutes last year, but you definitely don't want it to be a consistent thing. You're not winning games that matter with Haul Neto in your starting lineup, but he can provide some good minutes off the bench for sure. I think that's his ceiling, is being a very good bench guard for us this year.
I think this is where I get into trouble not watching, like, I need to pick like one other team that's actually like pretty good and watch them consistently and see what they get from role players. Cause I can't tell if we were just so limited last year in terms of like competent personnel that I've overvalued what Neto is as a player. Cause the fact that no one really wanted him this offseason scares me a little bit, but I actually liked most of Neto's games and minutes last year.
Oh, definitely. I think he performed more than what his price would indicate. No, veterans minimum. I would take Neto on a veterans minimum every single day of the week. That guy well performed, in my opinion, past that last year. And I think we may just, as a Wizards team, as a fan base, we haven't seen good bench guard play in well over probably a decade in the John Wall
Sessions
era.
Kinda,
Sessions, yeah, probably the best bench guard option that I could think of in that era. We had a lot of guys like Jody Meeks. You got your Thorntons, your
Jordan Crawford.
Yeah, Jordan Crawford. He was supposed to make the big three with John Wall and Andre Blatch, according to Ted Leonsis. But yeah, that didn't work out. So we've been recycling bench guards here for a while. I think Raul Neto put up one of the best, of the role-playing guards we've had here in well over a decade. And that's sad. But to get him back on a bench minimum, you know, I think that's really good value there in Raul Neto. He can bring you minutes at the one and the two. I had no issue bringing him back.
I think that'd actually be like an interesting premise for an article. Like, who's the best of the backup guards over the last decade and a half? And he'd have to be in the top couple. All right, just shifting gears here a little bit. Tommy Shepard's sort of preseason, training camp press conference yesterday. He basically all but, nailed in that Montrezl Harrell will come off the bench behind Gafford to start the year. So last year, Harrell played 69 games, averaged 13.5 points, 6 rebounds, and played about 23 minutes a game, which I expected he probably played more minutes than that, but he was maybe kind of underutilized for the Lakers last year. What would you consider a successful season for Harrell this year?
Well, when we look at Harrell's career, that's the role he's definitely suited best in, is that big man bringing energy off the bench. 2 years ago, I believe it was 2 years ago, he won Sixth Man of the Year. Mm-hmm. And that role was just really, that's the role that fits him best, is coming in, playing against bench defending bigs for the most part. And he's able to really attack them on that pick and roll. He brings a lot of energy on boards. I don't think he'll ever necessarily probably get to that Sixth Man of the Year level with us, but Agreed. If he can provide, that I would say more minutes than he provided in LA, I think there's a bigger need, especially with Thomas Bryant out until I believe December, at the very least. He's going to have to play a lot. And with Gafford last year, he had a lot of conditioning issues, as well as at times he would get into early foul trouble. So he's really going to have to be depended on to provide good minutes. And I would like to see improved defense at the rim from him. I don't know. He'll never really be a defender.
Not Rudy Gobert at any point.
No, he'll never be that, but I want to see him be competent back there. Sure. Wes Unseld Jr. He's helps guys. Like Jokic came into the league, he couldn't defend anybody. I think he's at least a competent defender now. So we'll see what he's able to do with a guy like him, but not necessarily Sixth Man of the Year, but a really good, he'd probably be our sixth, seventh, eighth guy off the bench and providing really good minutes.
Yeah, I can see a situation, which we'll get to some of the Gafford stuff in a minute here, but I can see a situation where Harrell actually plays more minutes than Gafford despite coming off the bench. But I'm going to answer this one slightly more abstractly, I think, and just say that we need Harrell to kind of replace the Russell Westbrook energy intensity thing. And last year's team couldn't practice much because older veteran guys and COVID protocols and all these things. So I'm just looking for Harrell to like push everybody, and be that guy that when you're in like the doldrums of the season and it's cold as shit out and you're traveling up to Toronto for like, Toronto, Milwaukee back to back, that like he brings enough energy to kind of carry you through, that kind of tough point in the season where it seems like it's a slog for everybody.
No, absolutely. And I definitely think he can do that. He's shown energy everywhere he's been, and he's been in, but he has also been in really good situations. So I'm interested to see if he's able to bring that with him here in Washington when, if things aren't going as well, if Bradley Beal's showing signs of being sad on the bench, if he's able to help bring that energy that I know he can bring.
Yeah, totally. And that's a perfect segue into the next guy on our list, Bradley Beal. I think for me, the easy answer is probably to say, like, if he can do what he did last year, that's a successful season. But I'd actually like to see less points per game, a couple more assists per game. So he averaged 31 points, 4.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists. I'd select a couple less points, few more assists, a lot more defense. And if he can kind of up from that 34.5% three-point percentage, I think that makes him like almost unguardable. I mean, he's a 90% free throw shooter, a career 40% guy. Like there's no way he's going to always shoot that poorly. And the other thing I think would be just to keep his minutes like a tiny bit lower. 36 a game is kind of tough for somebody that's going to end up playing, you know, a certain amount of the season. And he only had like 60 games played last year out of the 72, which isn't terrible. But, you know, this is a guy that had, you know, injury stuff early in his career. If you can kind of limit the mileage right before signing him to a longer term contract, I think that might be to everybody's benefit.
No, absolutely. He came in to the postseason last year injured, you know, a couple minor injuries heading into the postseason. So we didn't see him playing his best basketball when it mattered most. And I think that's probably to your point, because of the minutes that he logged early on in the year. I'm going to kind of shift to a different perspective on Bradley Beal. Not necessarily what I want to see from him on the court. I want to see from him off the court. I want to see when he's on the bench. I don't want to see him moping around if things aren't going our way early this season. I want to see him be that leader that he, you know, he's being paid to be, that he's supposed to be this franchise player. He's supposed to be the superstar of this team moving forward. Russell Westbrook isn't here to be the leader anymore, and say what we will about Russell Westbrook on the court, but that guy, he had a big effect on the younger players on this team. Bradley Beal is going to have to take some of that over on his shoulders. And he hasn't really shown yet that he's been willing to be that leader, take guys under his wing and not pout when things aren't going his way. That's the thing I really want to see is him be more of a leader this offseason. You know, if you want things to go differently, don't pout about it. Do something about it. Take ownership of your situation. And, you know, the other thing is, as you said, defense. Like, we know how you can score the ball 30 plus points per game, and that's going to come. He's going to be a scorer. He's going to facilitate. But I want to see you also pick it up on the other end, because if you're putting up 30 points a game, you can't be giving up 30 points a game. You gotta have, you know, we got to get some stops there.
Hopefully we're not in a situation where we're, you know, we're relying on Beal to try to guard Tatum in the final 2 minutes of a, you know, a must win game. But if he's on Dennis Schroeder, like, you can't get cooked. And just whoever that is, I mean, it could be Marcus Smart, you know, can't have a 25 point game against the Wizards with Beal guarding him. Just things like that would go a long way. And to your point about leadership, again, in Tommy Shepard's press conference yesterday, he talked a lot about, you know, Beal's not really going to replace Westbrook as a leader. He's a more of the behind the scenes guy, but, you know, he's always willing to take a guy aside and talk to him one-on-one, you know, behind closed doors when he needs to. Well, I'd like him to be a more vocal upfront guy. And a friend of mine always says that, you know, you always should point the thumb and not the finger. And I think that applies to Beal, because a lot of these post-game press conferences, it's, hey, everybody else needed to play better defense in that game, or we're not going to win anything. Or we, you know, more of the, hey, we couldn't guard a parked car. Like, I like when Beal says we about those things and includes himself in it. So that's a great call with the leadership. Kind of going from a vet to the most inexperienced person on this list that might actually play some meaningful minutes, Corey Kispert. What would you like to see from Kispert this season?
Well, I don't think the role is necessarily going to be there for him early on in the year. I think it's going to be tough for him to get some minutes with that. I think there's a log jam at the three, the two, the three, the four. There's a lot of wings to play. So I'm not sure if he'll necessarily touch the court to start the year. But what I do want to see from him when he gets in there, obviously, this team had no three-point shooting at all. And that's what he was drafted to do. He's a good corner three-point shooter. I like the role that we had Denny in last year. I think that's actually perfect for what Corey Kispert could do. So, you know, take Denny's role, completely just give it to Corey Kispert. I don't want to see Denny sitting in a corner. We'll talk about Denny here in a little bit. But, I want if somebody's going to be sitting in the corner, it might as well be a guy who can actually hit that shot. That's what he was drafted to do. And, you know, I think the three-point shooting roles probably are kind of filled up here to start the year. But if injuries take their toll on the Wizards as they normally do towards the middle of the year, that's a guy that's going to have to come in, and he's going to have to hit at an efficient rate. I'd like to see at least 35, 36, 37% from him.
I think a successful season for Kispert would be not having to play a lot of minutes and getting the opportunity to learn on the bench and figure out how to guard guys at an NBA level. I think he was actually like an underrated collegiate defender, but I'm just sort of sick of like big shooters who can't guard anybody. And yes, that is a knock on a particular guy we'll get to at the end here. But, you know, if Kispert's a total negative on the court defensively, it just becomes really hard to give him minutes with the, you know, the rest of the roster here. So if he can come in, like you said, and play, you know, spot minutes when they need him, or some guys get banged up during the year, or there's another COVID outbreak or something, like if he's just solid enough to come in and be somewhat of a 3-and-D wing, even if it's like a lowercase d, I still think that would be kind of like the best case scenario for this year.
Definitely. But as we've said, I don't think it's there for him early.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, you know, I've talked about this on other pods too, where like, it might not be the worst thing for him to play some minutes with the go-go this year and just get the feel for things and, you know, understand this, you know, like the principles and the systems, hopefully everything they're trying to, you know, install with the Wizards actually makes it down to the go-go. And that'd be a good opportunity for him to just kind of like learn and play through mistakes. And, you know, even as a 22-year-old or 23-year-old senior, whatever he was, you know, there's still going to be some like growing pains. So if he can get those out of the way and not cost the Wizards, that would be huge. And speaking of 3-and-D wings, we'll keep segueing here. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So I actually am pro starting KCP to start the year, just because he's like the defender I trust the most of the wing guys. Like, he just kind of is what he is, but at least he'll be solid. And we'll talk about Kuzma, but I prefer Kuzma off the bench where he has like more of an opportunity to like show more offensive range. And Caldwell Pope just seems like a good fit next to more ball dominant guards to me. So if he can, you know, play 25 minutes a game, shoot around 40%, and just be like the most solid of the perimeter defenders and be that kind of steadying force, I think he could be like probably the best wing defender we've had, I don't know, since like the two good Otto Porter years.
Right. Now, you look at this roster, I would have liked for them to probably bring in yet another two guard behind Bradley Beal. We talked about Howell Neto's ability to play the two earlier, but I probably would have liked another true solid two defender to bring in there. But so that's why I probably would also like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in the starting lineup. But you know, with the depth there, I'm a little nervous, sure, especially with the other guys we have playing at the wing. We got Denny needs to get his minutes, and I don't think he'll, you know, touch the starting lineup by any means this season. But as you said, Kuzma needs to get his minutes. Where does he fit in? I think we know the exact role we want Kentavious Caldwell-Pope playing, is that 3-and-D role. It all depends on when it's coming. Is it coming next to Bradley Beal, which I think that would be a good guy to have next to Bradley Beal, he's not a guy that has shown the last couple seasons he wants to defend, you know, guards or anybody for that matter. So you want a defender in there. We haven't had that next to Bradley Beal in a while. So I think he's the perfect fit next to him. It all depends on, is he coming off the bench? Is he starting? I would start him, but I'm a little concerned with that two guard depth. So if they do choose to go Kuz or someone else there at the three, I wouldn't be too upset with it either.
Yeah, he's a little smaller than the other options they could put out at the three. So maybe that's a matchup sort of situational thing. And I think it could be kind of like the Gafford Harrell platoon where, you know, there are some nights KCP starts, but Kuzma gets, you know, an extra 10, 15 minutes or whatever, you know, based on matchups and things like that. But KCP might be the guy in the league I've come around on the most, because when he first started with the Lakers, I thought he was the worst player in the NBA. Like I actually have tweets, I think, that are like, how is this guy on an NBA roster? Because I never saw him make a shot ever. And it says a lot about him that he's become just like a really solid, you know, steadying veteran presence. I kind of never thought I'd say that about the guy.
No, you look at his stats. I'm with you. You watch him play. I don't know if you see it night in and night out, but you look at his stats. The guy shoots over 40% from three. Like, the guy's knockdown. That's we haven't had a 3-point shooter other than Davis Bertans really in our building like that for a couple seasons now. So he fits a role that the Wizards really need. That was the one thing the Wizards probably needed the most in this offseason was perimeter shooting. So they fill it in the draft, Corey Kispert. And, you know, they pick up KCP, who I think is going to fit into this roster very well.
It's another guy that spent a lot of time around LeBron too. And you know, some of that stuff maybe trickles down and he can relay some of those things he's learned from other veteran guys. I think that's one area where maybe this Wizards roster is a little light, is sort of that veteran leadership. So KCP is actually like one of the older guys on the team at this point, which again is kind of crazy to me too. But next guy, Aaron Holiday, averaged about 7 points a game, one rebound, two assists, shot 37% from three in about 18 minutes a game. Holiday's another guy that, like, during the trade, they threw up his stats and I was like, wow, you know, he's a lot better than I actually realized. He's apparently very good defensively, based on whatever the defensive RPM and things like that, and pretty good 3-point shooter. But then I looked and I'm like, well, the guy couldn't beat out TJ McConnell. And like, McConnell's a very solid, scrappy defender and he changes the pace of the game and annoys other guards. But I just don't want to rely on somebody heavily that isn't better than McConnell. Again, not to slight McConnell, but like, I wouldn't want him to be the backup guard here if we could help it. So the thing for Holiday for me is just, again, it's sort of what we talked about with Neto and Dinwiddie. Like, if Dinwiddie is going to miss time and Neto has to start, that means a pretty big role for Holiday at times. And yeah, I don't know how much I trust that. The thing I do like about him over Ish Smith is just that he is a shooter, and at least more of that is always a good thing. So I'm a little kind of torn on how I feel about Holiday. I think a successful season for me is he plays about the same amount of minutes he played last year. We don't actually need him that much, but he shoots a high percentage and he actually plays good perimeter defense.
So interesting enough, you know, every time I watch Holiday play, I think to myself, this guy, I think he's an NBA player. I think he belongs out there.
Sure.
So I don't know how much him sitting the bench behind McConnell is an indication on himself, or whether, you know, that coaching staff was interesting towards the end of the year last year.
Yeah, there
was an interesting situation there last year. So it could be a little bit of that, but it could be him being beat out as well by McConnell. That's definitely something that could be the case, but you know, ideally he doesn't see the court too much this year. He's a reserve guy that is just there for depth in the ideal world, but this is Washington Wizards basketball. So you already know the worst of the worst is likely to come.
Yep.
So we're going to have to see him on the court. When I see him on the court, I want to see scrappy defense. I think that's the one thing another thing that we've lacked here is a good defending guards.
Yeah.
I don't know if you necessarily want to depend on him to be your 3-point shooter. Cause I mean, he can do it, but it's not, you know, what he's necessarily known for. So really just like Neto, I need good productive minutes off the bench. When we actually brought him in, I thought it might've spelled the end of Neto, because I'm really high on him. I know I'm probably higher on him than probably most anyone in the Wizards fan base is on Holiday, but he is small. That's something that I would have liked to see some size at the point guard position. If you're going to bring back Neto, I do like Spencer Dinwiddie's size. That's something that I think will benefit the Wizards, but
agreed.
Off the bench, I want to see good defense and the ability to knock down a 3-pointer when we need it.
I would have preferred Justin Holiday if I'd had the choice, a 6'7" guy that also shoots a pretty high percentage. But if Aaron Holiday can be even closer to the other two Holiday brothers in terms of production and impact, I think that would be a good year for him. Next is Anthony Gill. For me, a successful Gill season is he plays almost no minutes unless they're in blowouts. And he's just like a good guy on the bench, good locker room guy. And he plays hard and smart and he pushes people in practice. He seems like a good dude. So I think that's all probably pretty realistic, but you know, I just don't need more Anthony Gill minutes this year than we got last year. And I was actually surprised he played in 26 games last year. It was more than I kind of remembered. He averaged 3 points, two rebounds and played about 9 minutes a game.
No, you summed it up on him pretty well. There's not too much more to add to that. He's a good bench guy. He's a good locker room presence. And when he gets in there, I thought he actually played pretty well last year. He's a good defender. He can shoot the ball a little bit, but if he's playing minutes, that means something happened to Rui Hachimura. That means something happened to Kyle Kuzma. They're not playing well or they're hurt. So either way, him getting any big minutes this year, him providing anything, means something went wrong. So I like him. He's a good guy he's good depth. I'm not mad that he's on the roster at this point. He can provide a little bit of rebounding every once in a while, I think. But if you need a guy to go in there, lock somebody up, maybe he's the guy you turn to. The ideal season, he's not playing much.
Transitioning into the other guy who kind of plays a similar role and position at a much better level, Rui Hachimura. So this will be his third season? Feels like he's been around here longer, but last year he averaged about 14 points, 5.5 rebounds, 33% from three on 2.5 attempts, and played about 32 minutes a game. What would be a successful season for Rui Hachimura?
A successful season for Rui Hachimura is putting it all together. We saw last year he was able to improve as a three-point shooter. We saw he improved as an on-ball defender, I'd say. I think he actually took pretty big strides as an on-ball defender. I don't know if we saw the strides as an off-ball defender we wanted to see. So this year, year three in the NBA, this is his third year with NBA coaching, third year in NBA systems. I want to see him under a defensive coach in Wes Unseld Jr. really become a better off-ball defender. Really, he got a ton of comparisons to Kawhi Leonard, and I think that was probably a little unfair to him.
That's rough.
He's not nearly the defender that Kawhi is, but he's long. He's shown the ability to be able to defend. He was probably our best on-ball defender for a big portion of the year last year, which, I mean, I don't, it's not a big indicator,
it's a low bar,
not all because of him, but because of how poor our defense was last season. But I would love to see him be able to, become a better off-ball defender and become a better rebounder. We're going to have a lot of rebounds. Russ took up over 10 rebounds a game last year. So there's going to be rebounds to be had. That's got to come from our bigs, which Rui didn't get too many rebounds per game last year. That's one of the things I'd like to see him improve in.
I agree with all that. I think the only two things I would add are less hesitancy to shoot threes when open. Like one or two of those playoff games, he let it fly. In international play, he lets it fly. I think that's what we need from him. He was actually the second half of the season closer to a 40% three-point shooter than a 30% one. So I think that's hopefully trending in the right direction. But the only other thing, I think a successful season for him is avoiding whatever weird injury he seems to have ahead of him every season. The groin injury, I think I'll leave that as vague as possible. And then pink eye last year, there's always something kind of random that never seems to happen to NBA players. So if he can just get out of this year, being mostly healthy and, hey, maybe he misses a few games with a rolled ankle or a jammed finger or whatever, I think that's a success.
Well, Bonga is no longer around. So I think the groin injuries may be safe.
That's the hope. All right. Next one here. It's kind of a similar vibe to Rui, I think. Isaiah Todd, 6'9" rookie, 31st overall pick. They must have really liked this guy. Second round picks don't typically get 4-year deals before they've actually played. So again, not a lot of money, but I actually really like Todd. I've been on the record of saying I actually think he might end up being a better value pick than 31 than Kispert was at 15. And that's not a knock on Kispert. I just think Todd's got a crazy high ceiling. For me, a successful year is just him spending most of it in the G League, learning, practicing with the big club, kind of figuring some stuff out, and just them figuring out what he is as a player. Is he a wing? Is he a stretch five? He could kind of go a bunch of different ways, and it's great to be versatile, but I think you do have to have kind of a role that you're shooting for and trying to fill. And then you can kind of hone that as you go.
Absolutely. When, before he was drafted, I think I told, we're in a group together. I think I told everybody I wanted him to be drafted.
You were on this early.
I wanted him to be drafted with that second first round pick. They traded back and they were able to actually select him with a second round pick, which is actually even better. Didn't have to guarantee him any money. So that was the most ideal situation you could, drafting that guy. As you said, the best situation for him would be with the Go-Go this year, maybe even for 2 years, because we do have a pretty, you know, pretty stacked front court there. I don't know where the minutes come for him this year. So best case scenario, he's super young, just developing the G League like he did last year. He looked good in the G League last year. So, you know, he's able to play in the pros. He belongs at least at the G League level. I think he belongs as a pro as well, but the minutes again, just won't be there this year. I just want to see, as you said, what role does he fit into as a Wizard moving forward? That's where I want them to, I want them to kind of gel him into a role that he can get into moving forward.
Yeah, I think you try to groom him into replacing whoever you can't keep longer term between Kuzma and Hachimura, and maybe he can be a that level producer longer term. All right, just segueing into last year's first round draft pick, Denny Avdija. So played 54 games, which is actually more than I kind of remembered him playing. Averaged about 6 points, 5 rebounds, which I like. Shot 31% from three after a really hot start. He was pretty much ice cold down the stretch of his season, and then suffered the knee injury there. So what would you call a successful season for Denny Avdija?
A successful season is finding the right role for him. Because last year, Scott Brooks had him in a role that really just didn't benefit him, didn't benefit the team either. You put him, park him in a corner shooting threes. That he didn't enter the league as a three-point shooter. He actually, that was probably his biggest weakness entering the league, was his three-point shooting. So put him in a role that benefits him and that benefits the team. And I think that's having the ball in his hands in the second unit. I don't think he's a starter this year. Last year, he was probably forced into that starting role in an attempt to develop him quick. And he developed in some areas. I know at the beginning of the year last year, he actually looked like he had a decent 3-point stroke. He thought, okay, maybe he can shoot in this league, but it kind of regressed to the mean. We saw that, you know, okay, he's not a 3-point shooter yet at this league. So I'm sure he can develop that as he, you know, has more time in the league, but at this point of his career, he's better off suited with the ball in his hands. I think he should be, if not the sixth man, one of the first wings off the bench. And probably, you know, yeah, you want the ball in his hands with that second unit. He and Kuz should probably control the ball the most, you know, out of those guys.
I think for me, a successful year would be him being able to play some amount as a reserve power forward. Now, you can make him a point forward or whatever, but his biggest advantage to me is that he's strong enough to guard bigger guys and quicker than most, like, legitimate fours. And then the fact that he can't dribble with one hand becomes less of an apparent weakness, you know, when he doesn't have, like, somebody else's wing on him. But it's just the shooting thing. I would love to see him just kind of pick a form and stick with it. I think we sometimes get a little too much into having like perfect mechanics. And I think for a lot of these guys, it's just like repping it out, whatever the form is. So when you're switching, you know, his last year overseas, he had kind of like two different, like one half of the year he shot one way, the other half of the year he shot another way. Last year he started the season in a particular way and sort of regressed back to his old mechanics. So just pick a form and stick with it. And I think just once you get up enough attempts, you'll at least be solid. I mean, obviously better mechanics is better, but it's just that inconsistency I think hurts him. So I don't know. I think a successful season for Denny is just like learning, figuring out what you can do and bring to the team and, you know, just continuing to get better. I think that's really it. You know, he's more of a project than I think the first 10 games led us to believe. So hopefully that's the case. All right, Daniel Gafford. So 54 games last year. So on the season, he averaged 7 points and 4 rebounds. But with the Wizards, 10 points, 5.5 rebounds, and almost 2 blocks a game, and played about 23 games with the Wizards in about 18 minutes per game. For me, this is really straightforward. Gafford, if he can play 24 minutes a game at the same level of production he played 17 minutes a game, I think that's a success because he's just that impactful defensively.
Absolutely. He changed the entire defense when he got there last season. I don't want his role to change in any way. I don't want him shooting jumpers outside of the paint. I just want him attacking. throwing him lobs, getting boards, and giving energy like he did last year. As you said, I want to see more of him on the court. Need to see, 24 minutes sounds like a good number to me as well. Conditioning issues, those got to be figured out. You're in year, I believe, three, four now in the league.
Yes, year three.
So, yeah, this is the time where you got to start. You know, if you're going to be a true center in this league, you're going to play a lot of minutes. This is the year that you got to take that leap, I think. And he took a leap for sure last season, you know, as far as being a defender, being a shot blocker, being a lob threat. But now we need to see him do it consistently for a long period of time on the court. Got to stay on the court. You can't get into foul trouble. As we said earlier, we're going to probably have to depend on Harrell a lot because he gets into early foul trouble. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit concerning because Harrell's not the best defender. So if he's out, where is that defense? Where's that anchor in the middle coming from? So need to stay healthy, need to stay conditioned, but most importantly, need to stay out of foul trouble. Well, I guess that wouldn't be most important. Most important would probably be staying healthy, but
they're both, that's 1A and 1B, I think, yeah, for sure. Being able to be on the court for whatever the reason. Last year we had both Brendan Haywood and Etan Thomas on the show, and they both talked about how, like, it's just really hard to understand NBA defense at the center position because you're asked to kind of clean things up. And I think that's still true, even with the way teams guard today. It's just hard to be, you know, impactful anchor of a defense when you're still sort of young and inexperienced. And it's not like he got like crazy minutes right away. So I think the fact that he was so impactful last year after not really playing that much in Chicago, I think he could take a huge leap this year. I think the big thing for him would just be, on top of all the things you just said, he's a do what you do guy. Like, I don't want to see Gafford come in and trying to shoot threes. And the fact that he took like almost no shots outside the paint last year, I actually love, like, just be really good at what you're good at and stay efficient, run the floor really hard, you know, hit the treadmill on the off days and things like that. I think we could have a huge year from Gafford this year.
Absolutely.
All right. Sticking with another guy who's apparently also 6'10" now, which every time somebody talks about Kyle Kuzma, he grows an inch. So Kuzma played about 70 games last year, averaged 13 points, 6 rebounds, shot 36% from three, played 29 minutes a game. And I think from what I've heard from friends that are Lakers fans, took a pretty big jump over the last, well, the bubble playoffs plus last season, he became a much better wing defender. Maybe not all the time, but like when they needed him to step up. So I'd like to see Kuzma be able to show a little more. You know, I think he's got more in his bag than we saw when he played with the Lakers. So if he can come off the bench and just like be featured in an offensive role, I think that's huge. But again, be long, be a shooter, be a defender, and just kind of don't rush your role. Like, show these guys and the coaching staff that you can do more and sort of ease into a more featured role by the end of the season. So I actually think our best lineup is if Kuzma is playing really well, and that's our best chance for like a really successful year beyond kind of what they're projecting for us, is if he makes a huge jump. So that would be my take.
He's one of the people I'm definitely most excited about moving forward this season, because you look at the guys that have come from LA, gone to other situations, guys like Jordan Clarkson, mm-hmm. Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, even there's more guys, but they left their situations in LA and they became better players once they found their true role where they were really wanted. And I think maybe Kuzma can find that here. As you said, he did improve as a defender as time went on, but we saw his offensive ability before LeBron got there. people were comparing him to Tatum when they both entered the league. So that he's definitely had a far fall from that point, but I don't know how much of that is all his own fault or whether that's bringing in a LeBron, bringing in an Anthony Davis, taking up his touches. But at the same time, I don't think necessarily you want him to be dominating touches here. I would like to see him fill a role. And that for me is bench scorer. I don't want him to start. I would also like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to start this year at the three. So my ideal situation is he and Denny running that 3-4 spot on the bench and providing that scoring punch while Denny probably provides, the ball handling of that group. That's my ideal situation for Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah, I love that. I think pick your spots, you know, the games when Dinwiddie's out, that's your opportunity to go score more if you need to, or fill, you know, whatever they need for that particular night. If Beal's out, whatever that might be, pick your spots and not just like, hey, I'm not with LeBron now. Every time I get it, I'm going to jack it. So that would be ideal. All right. Next one, Thomas Bryant. This is, I think, his fifth year in the league now, I want to say. So he played 10 games last year, 14 rebounds or 14 points, 6 rebounds, 43% from three, about one block a game, and 27 minutes per game. What's a successful year for Thomas Bryant look like?
Successful year is him coming back healthy and providing any kind of defense he can. We saw a little bit of improvement last year before he got injured defensively, but I don't know if it was enough to really say that he's a good defender. I want to see him really improve, not getting back down as easily, getting pushed around on those boards. He needs to be able to be a tough interior defender because we know what he can do offensively around the rim. We know that he provides three-point shooting, although on a limited basis, he doesn't take too many per game. So I don't know if he's a bad defender, his three-point shooting doesn't necessarily make up for that enough to warrant him being out there. So I love what he brings offensively, but it's all about the defensive end for me. If he has a good defensive year, I believe it is a contract year for him again, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. So he has a chance to earn himself some money, and it probably wouldn't be here if you're keeping Daniel Gafford moving forward. So get yourself a payday somewhere else and play well by showing you can defend here.
Yeah, I think the ideal role for him is that energy big off the bench and similar to what Harrell does. So for me, it's watch how Harrell plays, you know, just cook backup centers. They're not as tough for you to guard defensively. And maybe that's, you know, the problem is like, he's never going to be able to guard Joel Embiid, but can he slow down like an almost 40-year-old Al Horford now off the bench or something? Like, I think that's probably a more realistic chance for him to look decent defensively. But yeah, the huge one is the health. Like, can you stay healthy? And I think that's the only thing holding him back at this point, really, is just, you know, he's shown he can put up numbers when he plays, but can he stay on the court? All right. Two-way contract holder, Cassius Winston. He played in 22 games last year, which I don't remember at all. I thought it was like four, to be honest with you. I remember very few of his minutes. I do remember being mostly unimpressed. And as a Maryland alum, I just watched years of Cassius Winston cook the Terps. So I thought he'd be a little better, to be honest with you, than what we've seen so far. So to me, a successful year for Cassius Winston is just actually push these other guys 4 minutes. Like, even if he doesn't actually play, just show that you look like a respectable NBA player and are good enough to like compete with Holiday or one of these guys for some of those sort of backup point guard roles.
Yeah. If he plays like he did last year, although in sparing minutes, he didn't look very good last year. He looks like he didn't really belong in the NBA last year. So for him, this year, it's just, yeah, as you said, show that you belong on this team, show that you belong in the league, because if not, you know, the go-go sure could use you for a long period of stretch, I'm sure. But he'll probably be with the go-go plenty this year. And that's where he should be. If he's playing any minutes this year, as we said, with other young guys on this roster, I mean, something probably went wrong. So I don't want to see too much of Cassius Winston this year, but as you said, push the other guys. If you're beating them out in practice, sure, get your minutes. But from what we've seen so far, I'm not a big Cassius Winston fan at the moment. I would say I think he's actually taking up a roster spot that could be used elsewhere, but I'd love to see him prove me wrong and provide some good backup point guard minutes.
I'm usually the guy that's like, no, it's way too early to give up on somebody. It takes a while. You know, we don't want to be the team that cut Cassius Winston and then he turned into Kyle Lowry or whatever. But like, I just don't think this is one of those situations. I think this is probably, one of his last years in the league, unfortunately, or at least you know, I hope that I'm wrong and he finds a role longer term and he plays well enough to stick around, because he seems like a really good dude. But you actually hit on something I kind of didn't think about. A successful year for me for Cassius Winston would be like locking down the point guard position for the Gogo and helping, you know, a Kispert if he plays minutes there, or Todd and those guys, like actually learn and grow as players, because the not having him on the summer league team, I think, screwed everybody up. So that's a great call. Speaking of the point guard in Washington, Spencer Dinwiddie, I'm going to read off his 2019 stats because last year he didn't really play. But in 2019-2020, he played 64 games, averaged 20.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, 7 assists, shot 31% from three, which is a little concerning to me, but played about 30 minutes a game, was a respectable defender. What do you expect from Spencer Dinwiddie this year, and what would you like to see from him in a perfect world?
So it's hard to tell what to expect from him this year, coming off of such a serious injury. You know, blowing out your knee is never something easy to come back from, but it appears that he's all about to be full go. I don't know if they're planning on playing him back-to-backs or what the plan will be moving forward with him, but what I expect from him is to provide Bradley Beal with that second facilitator option, because, you know, obviously you don't necessarily need him to be Russell Westbrook. I don't think you want him to be Russell Westbrook. I think we want him to move the ball around a little more than what we saw. We need to move away from the ISO ball that we saw last year and actually run an offense. So what we need from Spencer Dinwiddie is be able to facilitate a true offense, as opposed to facilitate, you know, individual players, facilitate individual plays. We need to really run an offense this season. And that starts with a point guard position. That starts with Spencer Dinwiddie. As you said, that 3-point percentage is a little concerning, especially next to Bradley Beal, who's sure. also coming off, you know, really poor 3-point shooting season at himself. Where is that 3-point shooting going to come from here in this backcourt? I think both of these guys have the ability to be better 3-point shooters than they've shown so far not necessarily Bradley Beal throughout his career, because we've seen him do it in his career. We just haven't seen it last year. I think these guys are better 3-point shooters than they showed last opportunity. So somebody's got to be a better 3-point shooter out of the two of them.
Yeah, I would stick to a similar theme and just say, I think somebody's got to be a better defender out of the two of them too. And that's been the issue. Like when the Wizards were good with the John Wall era teams, though, you know, they were the best in the years where he, but like, I'm going to actually guard consistently. You know, there were certain years where like Elfrid Payton set all of his career highs against Wall, but then there's another year where he made like a second team all defense. So you need Dinwiddie to be maybe not an all defensive team level guy, but you just can't be like a porous defender and play that many minutes next to Beal. So that's the biggest thing I'd like to see from him. We know he can score. I'm totally with you. I think he can shoot better than he did. And I would encourage anybody, if you get bored and have a couple hours to kill, there was a book that came out this year by, I want to say, Matt Sullivan, called Can't Knock the Hustle, about the bubble year Brooklyn Nets. And a lot of it is about Dinwiddie. And he's just like a really interesting dude. Like, you hear some of the weird like cryptocurrency things he's trying to do and like get people to invest in his career and things like some of the stuff is a little out there, but he just came off as like a really insightful, interesting guy. So I'm kind of excited to have him in Washington, and hopefully just selfishly we get some good quotes and things like that. And he's kind of a compelling guy off the court too. All right, the last member of like the actual locked in roster here, Davis Bertans. Last year played 57 games, averaged 11.5 points, 3 rebounds, 39% shooting on 7.5 attempts, played 26 minutes per game. And there wasn't like a perfect stat for this, but played somehow, less than 0% defense, if that's a possibility. So what would a successful year from Davis Bertans be in your mind?
Successful year for Davis Bertans is improving as a defender. Obviously, he's never going to be a good defender, but he just can't be a liability out there. Like last year, he wasn't bringing enough 3-point shooting to make up for his lack of defense. He was definitely a negative out there on the court at most times, but do what you're paid to do. That's let it fly. That's hit threes. If you're if you're not hitting threes at that rate, you got to get out of the game. And that's on Wes Unseld Jr. to do. And that's what Scott Brooks did not do. You know, he was struggling at the end of the year last year. And if he's not providing that 3-point scoring, he's hurting the team. So for what I want to see from him this year, you know, he shot 39% from three last year, which for most guys is great. For Davis Bertans, that's not. I want to see him get back above that 40% range that he was at 2 years ago. He was just a complete different player 2 years ago. And I'd like to see him get a little bit closer to that. I don't think he'll ever, you know, reach that level again here, but become a more dependable 3-point shooter than you were last year.
I think the numbers, like all that would be okay with in like a certain context. Like if he shoots 40% from three, I can live with that. If he averages 11 points a game, I can live with that. 7.5 attempts a game, I can live with that. It's just a lot of the shots he took last year, like I thought he would really benefit from somebody like Westbrook, but he somehow every 3-pointer he took was like fading to the side or from 40 feet or like, when he was squared up and actually had feet set, I don't really care even from the distance, as long as he's just like actually got a clean look. The guy's like still almost automatic. And I think a lot of those misses last year were, okay, yes, you're going to run around the screen and sort of fade to the right. And like, I just don't want to see a 6'9" shooter like shooting off that kind of movement, but like not totally settled and squared up. Like not everybody can do the JJ Redick, you know, sort of unbalanced lower body, 40% 3-point shooting. So if they can just create like better solid looks from him, I think that's a success for me too. So I don't know if that's Scott Brooks. I don't know if that's him not gelling with Westbrook. Like, I don't know what that is, or people putting more emphasis on him. So him not getting clean looks anymore. Whatever the situation, I just want to see him be like a little more settled when he's taking all those shots.
Well, you got to think at this point this year, he's going to come in at least to start a little better than he did last year. He came in last year during a COVID year. He got his money and he came into camp looking very out of shape. He was injured a lot of the year last year. So he's been playing basketball, playing international ball this off season, which I think is good for him. He wasn't able to do really anything given COVID times last off season. So I didn't necessarily want to give him that excuse, because you should be able to show up in shape anyway. You're a professional athlete making a ton of money. So that shouldn't have been an excuse last year, but he doesn't have that excuse this year. At the very least, he should come in healthy. He should come in shape. So hopefully he can start the year better than he did last year and not try to dig himself out of a hole.
We saw those 30-pound dumbbell curls that the team loves to post that he's been doing in the offseason here with the team. So hopefully that's a good sign. All right, just kind of to close us out here, we don't have to go through each of them individually, but just give me one of these four that you'd like to see something from, or maybe expect something from. The guys on exhibit 10s, Jay Huff out of Virginia, 7-footer, Jordan Goodwin out of St. Louis, 6'3", kind of rebounding, assisting, mini Russ kind of guy, you know, not really a shooter, but big physical guard. Jaime Echenique, which was one of the more interesting, fun guys to watch, I think, during summer league, for good and for bad occasionally. And then Jordan Shackle, a guy Bullets Forever's Kevin Broome was very high on. The guy was like a flamethrower at San Diego State. So any of those four you expect anything from, or maybe to be in the second two-way or make the team in some kind of meaningful capacity?
I would have my eye on Goodwin out of all those guys. I think he showed a little bit there in the summer league, not really enough to say this guy's going to get some time this year. I wouldn't say really any of these guys I would predict to get time, but it's an NBA season. It's going to be a grueling grind for a lot of these guys. So I'm sure one of these guys, if not a couple of these guys, are getting an opportunity. I think Goodwin's probably the guy there that would have the best opportunity in my eyes to provide some kind of minutes. A little bit of a scoring capability. As you said, he's a scrappy guy, which I like in that backup guard position, someone who can come in and maybe provide some defensive minutes if he needs to. But I don't foresee any of these guys getting any big NBA minutes this year, and hopefully that's the case. But if not, that'd be the guy I would keep my eye on.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there too, only because, you know, Neto's a little smaller, Holiday's a little smaller, Winston's not particularly big. At least Gooden theoretically gives you some, you know, potential size if he turns into somebody, you know, 2 years down the road or whatever. So I think that's probably the right call. Eshinike was kind of entertaining, so I'm happy to see him end up on the go-go this year. I would assume Jay Huff is probably the starting center for the go-go. So, you know, any of those guys, Shackle could come in and maybe hit some threes and be a mini Garrison Matthews for the go-go, something like that. I think, but yeah, Goodwin's probably the one that has the most legitimate chance at being a Wizard longer term of that group, I think. This guy is not on the roster, which a lot of people were talking about, but Kyrie Walker was a player that got a lot of buzz in the offseason. Kyrie Walker not going to be on the training camp group here, but I do think we'll see him in Washington longer term. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that in an upcoming episode. We're going to try to get him on the show here still, but that's a guy that I was kind of excited about. It sounds like fans were excited about. And one of the things Tommy Shepard's emphasized is just trying to get more athletic. And Walker certainly looks like an athlete from all the YouTube videos and overtime, you know, clips and stuff like that. So have you seen any of Walker, and what do you think about him longer term?
I have seen some on Walker, obviously not too much recently, which is the concern, which is which is why he's not on an NBA roster. But from what everybody has seen, this is, you know, this is a good pickup. In my opinion, you can only benefit from this pickup. It doesn't hurt you to give him a shot. So, you know, from what he showed in high school, this is one of the best high school players of his time. So he's a big physical guy. I don't know if it translates to the NBA level, which we'll see. But obviously, Tommy Shepard liked enough to give him a shot to at least stick around. We'll see what his situation is here moving forward. But I definitely like him, you know, being in the building, being around and giving him a shot, because there's no reason to not give him a chance. You know, he seems like a good enough guy. So why not see what he's got in the tank?
Low risk, reasonably medium reward at the very least. So I think those are the kind of moves Tommy Shepard's kind of, you know, made his name on. So I'm all for that. All right, Chase, I've taken up enough of your time here. Just close us out with, who's one guy on this roster that folks might not be as familiar with that you think will take a big jump? So not Beal or Dinwiddie, but one of the other guys that you're expecting a bigger year from than most people seem to be.
Well, I honestly do think a big year is coming for Kyle Kuzma this year. I think getting out of LeBron and AD's shadow can only benefit him. He showed that he has a lot in his bag offensively. He has improved as a defender, but, you know, just getting that opportunity to actually get touches and be somewhere where you're wanted and where you're needed. I don't think he was necessarily needed as much in LA as he would be here. I think his role here, you know, I would like to see him be that bench scorer off the, you know, the guy that provides the scoring for us, mostly off the bench. I don't want to see him start, but whatever role they have for him, I think he's going to be an important piece moving forward, whether it's next to Rui, behind Rui, wherever he's at, he's going to be an important part of this team this year. So that's the guy I would say I'm probably higher on than most.
I was worried this might happen and that we'd agree on pretty much everything the whole episode, but I'm with you. I actually think Kuzma might have a better shot at a sixth man of the year for this team than Harold does. So I'd love to see that. Chase, tell everybody where they can find you and get more of these reasonable, nuanced basketball content that you provide here.
Well, I've taken a little bit of an off season off from my podcast, but I should be pushing back forward here pretty shortly. You can find the Wizards Walkthrough with Chase Carroll on just about any streaming platform you can find podcasts on. I will be hopefully streaming here in the next couple of weeks. I'm definitely excited that the season's getting started. So I will likely have Matt on here on my podcast pretty soon as well. So if you like Matt's content, you like crazy Wizards takes, feel free to follow me on Twitter at @ChaseCarroll_. And I post Wizard stuff, and that's just about it. So If you're crazy about the Wizards like me, you can find my stuff.
You're not giving yourself enough credit there, Chase, because you said crazy Wizards takes, but you're actually the guy I go to when I'm irrationally thinking about the team. And I'm like, all right, who will set me straight here? So I appreciate that. Folks, I'm sure we'll have Chase back at some point during the season here too, to keep this moving. Again, find him on Twitter, Wizards Walkthrough. Chase, thank you again for the time, and everybody, we will check you next week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.